June 21st, 2020 is Father's Day. And on this episode, we decided what better way to celebrate dads than with a lively discussion on the best and worst fathers in pop culture. On the list for best dads, we have Darth Vader, Furious Styles from the movie Boys in the Hood, and Rick Grimes of The Walking Dead fame. And holding down the list for the worst dads of all time are Palpatine from the Star Wars series, Detective Jimmy McNulty from HBO's The Wire, and Bounty Hunter Clownface from the 1996 comic book series Body Bags by Jason Pearson, who coincidentally has a trade paperback of the series titled Father's Day. Even though we chose this topic because it was lighthearted and fun, we do touch on what it takes to be a good dad, and really, a good parent overall. So, thanks for listening, and happy Father's Day to all you dads out there.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
So the world is burning, but we still have to celebrate holidays. It's Father's Day.
Right.
And we decided to get together and talk about some of the greatest and the best dads in pop culture and in media, and then also some of the worst and the shittiest dads in pop culture and in media. And on the chopping block for, well, I won't say the chopping block.
Yeah, yeah.
But up for discussion on the right up on the up for discussion as far as greatest dads, we've got Darth Vader, and this we don't even have to guess which one of us chose Darth Vader as the great dad.
Join.
There's no mystery there, but
together as Darth Vader and son.
We've got Furious Styles from Boys in the Hood.
Yeah. Always
played
hard.
By Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And we've got Rick Grimes from The Walking Dead, the television show version, not the comic version.
I was wondering if you're going to make that distinction, because he kind of got down to the comic show, but go ahead.
He did get down in the comics, and I read the first trade, but I didn't read all. I'm not a big fan of the comics like everybody else is. So I have to go with Andrew Leakin's portrayal of Rick Grimes. And then on the terrible shitty dad side, we have Palpatine. Again, yes. No question who chose Palpatine.
Star Wars Deluxe.
But many of those children seem to be unnatural.
We've got Clownface from the Body Bag, Dark Horse Body Bags comic, written and drawn and created by Jason Pearson.
Correct.
Go Jay.
And we've got Jimmy McNulty, Detective Jimmy McNulty from The Wire.
Bushy Top.
As one,
yeah,
Bushy Top. Yeah, one of the crappiest of all crappiest dads.
Jimmy, but we love him so.
Yeah. But let's go ahead and start with Vader, D, since you know, go ahead. Defend yourself. No, don't be scared. And make it nasty.
And that's the reference, so I feel it goes to the next time we do another show. But let's put it this way. Okay, as Anakin Skywalker, his idea was, all he ever did was just try to protect his family. You know, he lost his mother at a young age. You know, he left home to become this great Jedi. Was kind of somewhat led astray by what that meant in totality, but I mean, leaving everything behind you and never seeing his mother again. So when he goes back to see his mother again and loses her, that was his first step towards the dark side, becoming this person that was kind of a bit of a you know, on the edge emotionally. And then subsequently, you know, he met Padme, they fell in love, and she got pregnant. You know, they were married on Naboo, so it was actually, they were actually, were, it actually was a quote-unquote intergalactic legal marriage.
He swole her up first, though, right?
I don't know. There's no telling. I mean, I think, <he's swole.
laughs> Damn.
Maybe so, yo. But at any rate, you know, later on down the line, I mean, everything he did, his steps towards the dark side, being seduced by the Emperor, was trying to protect his family, was trying to was trying to make, you know, Padme live beyond his dreams and what he had forecasted, not realizing by holding on so tight, he actually caused, like literally around the neck too, he actually caused, you know, her to die. And, you know, the twisted nature of Palpatine was to say that, you know, his first example of a bad dad was
well, no. Let's
stay, stick with the good dad.
I'm saying, as he's going towards that, he manipulated Anakin to believe that he had killed Padme. He didn't kill her. She died of heartbreak. So essentially, he because of his actions, he did kind of kill her, but then he didn't. You know, she lost the will to live, ultimately, is what happened. So
okay,
later
let's
on,
let's get to why towards, he's a good dad.
I'm gonna tell you, he's a good dad. That's one reason why he's a good dad. He's a good dad because what he did to become Vader was for his family. The second thing he did was at the end of the first saga, he redeems himself by saving his son. He actually takes the thunderbolts to, you know, end the reign and the totality of the Emperor. So that's why he's a good dad. He's a good dad. Like he did what he did. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the extent of what he went to gain that moniker. Ultimately, he still loved his son. That's what shows through in the end. Doesn't mean that he wasn't a bastard. Doesn't mean he wasn't like killing planets and shit and killing billions of people
and babies
and babies, yo.
And planets and
yeah
and
yeah
and everything.
Yeah. I didn't say he was perfect, but just that he was a good father, yo. So,
okay. I just wonder, how can you be a good dad if you're a mass murderer? How can you be a good dad if you're such a bastard that they have to hide your child away for fear that you might kill your child?
But was it really that he was really afraid that he might kill her? Or was it a fear that he would try to convert him or take him under his wing and turn him into another dark side user?
How can you be a good dad if you cut your son's hand off?
Well, thing is, though, they know that there's something about that. They actually talked about that in Star Wars canon. They talked about how what happens. He didn't go full on. Like he was disciplined the entire time. He was like, okay, you know, don't make me kill you.
If Adrian cut Carrington's hand off, is he a good dad?
No, of course not.
I bet you won't do that again, though.
I bet you believe the stove is hot now.
Can't you feel the stove no more.
Right? Well, let me
ain't gonna do it no more.
You're right. Not with that hand, you're not. but no, so check it out. So what he did was people often say it's like, well damn, he was beat Luke's ass. But here's the thing though. At no time did he force choke Luke. There was no time when he went full on Luke and could have killed him at any time. He totally could have just killed him. If he wanted to, that's what he does. Like he's known for choking people out with his assist choke, just claps in the throat. He didn't do that. He was toying with him. He was trying to get him to see that. Okay, you know, you need to stop trying to fight me. I know you all this idea of who you think that I am as your father, and what I've done in this galaxy has been really fucked up. But I'm your father, so now I want you to understand. You know, you can't beat me. Let's just stop all this fighting shit. You tire me out now. You know, you hit me on the shoulder with that lightsaber. You're playing too much. Let me put that final discipline on your ass. They cut his sword off. He could have killed him any time. That's my point. But he didn't because he knew all along he was his father.
I would argue that redemption doesn't make you a great dad.
Okay. And I'll give you that.
That what makes you a great dad, because we would have to define what makes a great dad.
Mm-hmm.
But great dads are built every day.
Okay.
Like great dads prove themselves every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost like saying I let my son live in poverty for 30 years and then on the 31st year I gave him $1 million. That doesn't make up for the 30 years that you intentionally let him live in poverty.
29
years, yeah. So to me, a redemption tale, which is what you're talking about here, and it's certainly, you know, somewhat applies, although I still think, okay, so if your dad is Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, just because he, you know what I'm saying, at the end, he, you know, he chose the Lord Jesus as, you know, his, he was an asshole. He was not a good dad. Yeah.
I can ask that.
And the other thing too is for me, and maybe Adrian, you might agree with this, and D, you might even agree with this.
Uh-huh.
To be a good dad, you have to raise your kids.
You have to be there. Yeah. That's the thing. You have to be there consistently.
You have to be there.
Right.
Yeah. You got to be present.
I'll say this. Sure.
All right, Adrian, go ahead with Furious, man.
Okay, all right. Yeah, wait a minute, as far as
is he the good dad?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Okay. With the name like Furious, man, you know, just but all right, nevertheless. I chose Furious Styles as far as my pick for a good dad. You know, from 1991's Boys in the Hood. Written and directed by John Singleton, you know.
Yep.
And the reason I chose...
The late, great John Singleton.
But yes, rest in peace, rest in power. Mm-hmm. The reason I chose Furious Styles was that when I saw that movie when it came to video cassette when I was about 12. My dad brought it home from the video store and everything. And at the time, it was an important movie. You knew it was an important movie because Pepsi sponsored by Pepsi. Sponsored by Pizza Hut, you know, that type of thing. But
that's funny.
But anyway, you know, we watched it, and you know, and it got me to thinking, even at that young age, just about my relationship with my dad, because the movie starts off with the, you would presume the lead character Trey, he comes to stay with his dad. His mom drops him off and says, "Hey, I can't do nothing with this boy. Furious, you raise him." And the parents were divorced, okay? Mm. And so Trey goes to live with his dad, and he's having to adjust to everything. You know, his dad tells him, "Hey, you need to go out and rake the leaves." But there's not a tree in sight, but you got a yard full of leaves. That's what inconsistency I didn't get. Like, where the trees at?
Right.
But anyway, just things like that, you know, trying to teach him responsibility, and it just metastasized himself into becoming a young man. And there comes a situation to where a friend of his is killed, and his dad, Furious, you know, he's sitting on the couch, and it kind of, you know, juxtaposed back and forth. Trey is riding around with his brother's brother, you know, looking for, you know, the dudes that shot him and everything. And Furious is just on the couch. He has these silver balls that kind of you use to meditate or whatnot. And he just goes back and forth. And he's hoping that he's instilled enough in Trey that he's going to make the right decision. You know, all them years of growing up, imparting lessons to him and everything, that he hopes he's going to make the right decision and not do what he thinks he's going to do. And luckily, Trey doesn't. He gets out the car, and unfortunately, you know, his friend's brother meets an untimely demise, but at his own doing. You know what I'm saying? And then the other thing about Furious too is that, you know, he was trying to impart lessons to Trey as well. You know, he was telling them, like, you know, look at your boys over there. You know, the friend that got killed. Huh?
No dad.
Oh, there you go. Do-do-do. But, but the friend that was killed, Ricky, and his brother, Doughboy, they stayed
Ricky,
with them.
Ricky was played by Morris Chestnut.
Yes.
And Doughboy was played by Ice Cube.
Ice Cube, yes. And their mother was played by Tyra Farrell. But, yeah, he was like, you know, look at that. You know, the dad's left and everything. You know what I mean? And, you know, they just kind of out there a bit. You know, their mom trying to do the best they can, but you be careful. You see how they're going to end up. And Trey kind of is like, "Well, why are you so hard on me all the time?" He was like, "I'm doing it for a reason." And a lot of fathers, a lot of parents, but especially dads, seem like that. I'm trying to tell you something, and you're not going to get the message right now, but I'm doing it for a reason. And it's only upon reflection later in life that you're like, damn, I'm glad he told me that. Yeah. It's been a lot of instances, like with my own dad, you know, rest in peace, of the same thing, you know? So when I watched Boys in the Hood, and even when I watch it now, you know, I think that that is a great example of a great dad. And then moreover, a great, you know, black dad as well. You know what I'm saying? Just because he was just trying to impart that to his child, to his son. You know, lessons that he would need going forward.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think one of the things that stuck out to me about Fishburne's portrayal of Stiles was, like what you just said about a black dad, especially in the 90s, you know, his way of raising his son and the lessons he was trying to impart and the example he was trying to be was very specific. It was very different from what Andy Griffith was given to Opie, and what any of the other TV dads or movie dads would have been given to their kid, and it was very no nonsense. And you never ever, even as hard as he was on Trey, you never got any kind of a sense that it wasn't all coming from a place of love and wanting him to grow up and be able to take care of himself and to make good and correct decisions, you know, when the time came. But yeah, and to an extent, he, you know, we all would have been, you know, turned out well to have a dad like that, you know, because, you know, it is a divorce situation. So, you know, Trey hadn't been raised with him. And I'm sure Stiles was thinking, you know, doesn't matter, you know, how great a mom, you know, my wife is or whatever, you know, I'm going to have to raise him differently because I understand, you know, what it's like to have testosterone running through your body. You have to just deal with your son differently than you do, you know, a girl or whatever.
So. Even to the point where he's making up stories about his first sexual experience. He's like, okay, right. Yeah, Dad, I was, yeah, okay, son. Yeah, there you were.
Right. I'm unimpressed.
Right? And yeah, he'd have heard it all before. But right? When he thought that he had actually done that, he popped him in the back of the head like, I hope he used a rubber. You know, right? I don't need no grandchildren coming up in here talking about, daddy, granddad, give me a dollar. And then Dawned on Fear is like, wait a minute, hold up. Boy, I hope you use the rubber. and then the one more thing that kind of, what was a good example of this in the movie was there was a scene where Furious, Trey, and his friend Ricky, they all go out to one of these land developments that Furious is working. He works in real estate. And he's explaining to them about gentrification, you know? And he's standing there explaining it to Trey and Ricky about how this is going on in their neighborhood. What does it mean? And these knuckleheads walk over. It's like, man, what the hell are you talking about? Talking all this bullshit for? And he schooled them. And, right. You know, as a father, sometimes you have to be a father to children that aren't even your own.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he ended up schooling them, and those knuckleheads got a modicum of respect for him. They were listening to him. They're like, oh wow. You know, because sometimes it takes someone, not just necessarily who isn't of your own blood, but who just talks to you,
right?
Who cares enough to talk to you and try to steer you in the right direction,
right?
You know, and a lot of times a good father will do that not only for his own children, but for other wayward children too, who may need it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I chose Furious Stiles.
Yeah, that's right. Good choice, man. I stand by that.
Yeah.
Cosign.
Yeah, so
even though you didn't like my Vader, but that's okay.
You had a lot of explaining to do.
Well, I guess he is the Dark Father, so.
Go.
Well, let's talk about Rick Grimes, yo. Let's talk about Rick. Now, this is TV Rick.
Okay.
This is not comic book Rick.
All right.
I think Rick was a good father because, you know, it's the zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
You got your little 10 or 12 year old son Coral.
Coral.
You know, you got to teach Coral. Coral. You got to teach Coral how to shoot.
Yeah.
How to blow the zombies' heads off, yo.
And how to get shot.
How to bash him in the head with a blade or a screwdriver. you know, how to bludgeon them with a blunt object so that their reanimated brains run out on the street. That's what a good dad in the zombie apocalypse, that's what he got to do. Yo, that's what he is tasked with doing when you got a young son or a young daughter.
He ended up having
a daughter later on.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and one of the greatest lessons I think that Rick taught Carl is, you know, in the zombie apocalypse, you know, we have our group, we have our tribe. Anybody outside of our tribe, we don't fuck with them.
Okay.
You don't bring nobody in here that we don't know. Okay. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're about. We don't know if they're going to kill us, rape us, do any of those things. So anybody who's outside of our group, we don't fuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl actually breaks that rule later on the TV show. I don't know if he does in the comics.
See?
But and it ends up being hit to his, you know, to his demise too.
Mm.
Damn.
But the greatest of all of Carl's achievements under the tutelage and the mentorship of his father, Rick Grimes, is when his mom had been scratched and she was gonna turn and she was pregnant.
That was hard.
Carl
man.
Was with her.
That was hard. Man.
Carl took out his revolver and shot his mom in the head.
Whoa! Holy!
Man.
Woo!
Man.
And took her out, yo.
And then took the baby out, you know. And they still saved the baby on top of that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Saved the baby, but yeah, had to kill his mom.
So, it's just a small digression. So he killed his mom, obviously, because she was going to turn.
Right.
But
they were able.
She wanted them to. She begged them to. Basically.
Sure. But they were still able to save the baby. The baby was far enough along that they were able to save the baby.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can't remember. Did she already have the baby? Did the baby pop out, or did he do a C-section on his
body? I was about to say, hey, Dr. Carl Grimes, MD.
I think post-apocalyptic
MD.
I can't think about it. If I had to think about it, I'll think that it was two people involved. It was a person, a female, actually delivered the baby, and Carl did put the coup de grâce on his mother.
Yeah.
So okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yo.
It's kind of like a Harakiri, man. You got a second to take your ass out, and then somebody slit the belly.
That was a hell of an episode, dude. That's when Andrew Lincoln really, really submitted his acting chop to me.
He crushed it. He still crushes it.
Yeah.
He crushed it up until recently, but he's fantastic. And I think the other thing, like what you were saying, Adrian, about a good dad sometimes having to be a father to other people, that's what Rick has kind of been to the group.
Mm. Yeah.
To many of the people in the group, you know, especially the younger folks, you know, it's kind of like a father figure, you know, a leader and a father figure and, you know, a figure, you know, who's a source of wisdom and, you know, in decision making. And some of those decisions, like what I'm joking about them, but, you know, some of those decisions are really difficult decisions to make, but they have to be made.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the other things, too, is, you know, a good father, a good parent, really, mom, you know, moms included. But a good father, you know, has to make decisions that are sometimes not going to be popular with the group that he's leading with his family. And you gotta know that you're making the decision, you know, as best you can, you know, for the right reasons. So,
son, what you don't understand, my words might never explain. So I am hoping that time will. Things may not go as you planned. Dark clouds might bring you pain. But I will be in your heart still, telling you.
All right, so passing the baton back to D for Palpatine.
Oh, no.
There you go. Oh, Palp,
yeah. I mean, what's to say about him, man? I mean, he's a Phantom Menace, dude. I mean, he's the architect of everything that happened in terms of the Skywalker legacy and family. I mean, you know, arguably, if you listen to the audiobook, which is canon, is it canon? I think I'm pretty sure it's canonized at this point. He killed his whole family.
The films kind of diverge from that,
right? Yeah, right. Well, I mean, no, but he killed his family. He killed. This is before he became like seduced by the dark. As he's being seduced by the dark side, he killed his family in the process. He took out his whole family, dude. His mother, his father, and his sister just killed him. You know, you talk about evil. That's evil. I mean, come on. It doesn't get much more evil than you talk about Jeffrey Dahmer and people like that.
Yeah.
I mean, was it patricide? When you take out your entire family, it's just murder. You took out your whole family. You know.
Yeah.
So
familiar side. Familiar
side. Something like that sounds about right. But no. Yeah. So anyway. Okay. Yeah. So he took them out. He killed his. He killed. We didn't even find out about. Until recently, he had a son, which he sired, that was Ray's father, you know, that he chased him off planet and had them killed because he couldn't control them to do what they wanted to do as far as giving him an heir, which had responsibility. So that's strike two. He killed his own son. Why wouldn't he kill his son? He killed his other family. See,
he killed his daughter-in-law too, right? Because the son was with his wife.
Yeah. Kill them all. So he's just a ruthless bastard, you know. That's just what he does. I mean, he's always been a power chasing wealth, dude. The Palpatines on Naboo are known for being this climbing social structured family that was always in the regal, always noble, but had this kind of this hunger for more power than they actually really had. So they weren't quite kings; they were nobles. So that was the thing. So, you know, I mean, what else can I say? I mean, even at the very end. I mean, to the very end of this quote unquote Skywalker saga, when he's face fighting his granddaughter, you know. He's like, okay, yeah, I brought you here so that I could be, so I could absorb you and shit, and get back to where I was, you know. So, go ahead, Adrian.
I was gonna ask, do you feel like, given Palpatine's history, you know, mm-hmm. of killing off his family, killing off his seeds mm-hmm. and everything, when he finally does get to Anakin, and it's almost like, oh, this is kind of he's becoming the son that I've always wanted.
Oh, so exactly what it was.
I'm not gonna dust him yet. And then right. towards the end of like Jedi, like in Jedi, he's like, I'll believe this. It's almost like you betrayed me by trying to be a father to your own son. What about us? What about us, goddammit?
What about us? And I add to that. You're right, Agent. I add to that. What happened too was, when later on down the line, I mean, there was a built-in resentment towards Palpatine because when he found out Luke was alive, there was like, okay, you told him my son was dead, man. You know, so mm-hmm. that started to sow the seeds toward, you know, me, you know, taking over and becoming the lead quote unquote Sith. You know what I'm saying? So he started sowing those bad seeds of bad blood towards. Now, of course, you're talking about
Vader here, Dean?
Vader, yeah, Vader. Vader.
He had told Vader that his son was dead.
Yeah,
Luke was dead.
When he finds out, okay, now is he alive, he's fighting me. You know, he's alive, he's fighting me. So it's like, I'm like, wait a minute.
Okay, fight me.
You know? Right? So, Palpatine, man, you know, to your point, though, as far as him finding Anakin as a son like that he never had, that's a very good point because until the point where, you know, he got burnt up, he was a chosen Sith person. He was actually somewhat angry at Anakin for getting that situation in the first place, and that's why he punished him by putting him in that armor, which constantly tortured his ass. Because you know, other people had better armor that been in certain similar situations throughout the galaxy, but they gave him that armor which caused him pain, and pain was the thing which caused the Sith to fully reach their full power and their full potential. So to be in constant pain was a reminder of the fact you failed me, and don't fail me again, you know.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
So, yeah, the Sith are some cruel motherfuckers, yo. Like they go through serious like training that's like stuff you see, you know, masters how they old Shaolin masters treated their yeah they put the same kind of training, dude. Cruel stuff, dude. Like, I need you to walk through that fire right there. I need you to walk through it. I need you to walk across the
hot
those
coals.
Yeah,
glass.
Yeah, man. And the book I'm referring to that gives you all this knowledge is about Palpatine, and it's a really really good book, man. Everybody listening should check it out and listen to it or read it. Very good. It gives you all kinds of background on how he grew up as a kid and how he became who he became. Treacherous to the last.
You know why Palpatine ultimately killed everybody, killed his family, his seed, and killed everybody off, right?
Why? He's from Illinois.
Unlimited power.
Okay.
You're waiting on it.
Right? Okay.
Oh, man.
Nice, hey, nice.
Before we move on from that, though, there was it just popped in my head as far as another space opera dad type of thing. Mm-hmm. The Meta Barons has a similar thing with the Sith. Okay. You know, like, with the Meta Barons, literally, in one person, it's the mom and the dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this being gives birth to the next warrior, but the son or the child has to kill the parent. You wow. know what I'm saying? In order to move on. You know, like he trains him in order to kill him. He's like, I'm going to train you all I can. In fact, I'm going to chop your ear off. I'm going to chop this off and everything. Damn. And you're going to be part cyborg now. But I'm training you so that you can kill me and then become the next Meta Baron. It's real crazy. It's real crazy, man.
That's a Dan Jodorowsky, man. That's his
Jodorowsky, yo.
I created the ultimate Dune. That David Lynch was shit. It was shit, I'm telling you.
Ultimate Dune. That's a Marvel miniseries.
It's a Marvel miniseries, yo. Drawn by
Mark Bagley, yep. Brian Hitch. Ultimate Dune.
Ultimate Dune, yo.
But to his credit, man, Jodorowsky did do that, man. He had the top players in the industry all lined up, dude.
Sure.
He had some great artists and some interesting characterizations, ideas for these characters that would have been completed characters of Dune, but that's another conversation.
Yeah.
But right? Yeah, man, that's funny, man. That's funny.
Oh, man.
Adrian, okay. I'm going to jump in real quick sure. with my shitty dad.
Yeah.
Let you close it out with the great clown face. But my shitty one is Jimmy McNulty, the detective from The Wire. Mm. Arguably the protagonist of the series. It's a large ensemble.
Mm.
But
yeah.
He's definitely, you know, the narrative through line through all five seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a shitty dad, man.
Oh, yes.
He's a shitty dad. Yeah. You know, he cheated on the mom.
Mm-hmm.
She put him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not spending proper time with his kids because he's married to his job.
Yeah.
You know, when he does get time with him, you know, he's doing everything last minute. He's putting the bed together last minute. You know.
Yeah.
He's late on his child support. He doesn't pay his child support.
Yeah.
You know. There's a point in season two, I believe it is, when McNulty is at the farmer's market and he sees Stringer Bell, you know, one of the number two crime lord in the city, shopping in the farmer's market.
Season one.
And so what he does, he's with his sons, Sean and Mikey,
mm-hmm.
and he's taught them how to do a surveillance technique called front and follow.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And maybe we could ask our friend Braxton Harrison
right.
if he's ever employed such a thing.
But who's a good dad, you know, by the way.
Who was a great dad. Yes, right? Yeah, he was a great dad. Any dad who names his child after a comic book character is a great dad. That's my man right there.
Yeah.
$50,000. But anyway, front and follow is basically like if you have two cars, one is in front of the person you're following, one is behind them. And then, so as to not give yourself away, at some point the front turns off, and then the one that's following moves around and moves in the front, and then the one who was in front below moves to the back.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
So that's
cool.
So that's how it's pulled off. And he taught his kids how to do that, and then sent them to go after Stringer Bell in the farmer's market, and then lost track of them.
Yes.
And then had to go up to the front and have the guy get on the intercom system. And say, hey, Sean or Mike, your father's up here and he's looking for you. And his wife was pissed off about it.
Obviously so, yeah.
And rightfully so. He's just a crappy dad. He's just a crappy dad. What were you going to say, Adrian?
I was just going to say several things about that. Before we started recording, we're currently doing a fresh rewatch of The Wire. I think Swain is doing his second rewatch, and I'm doing like my third or fourth, I think. And the thing that strikes me about Jimmy McNulty is how much of a bastard he is. I realized that initially, but now that I'm watching it again, it's just like, oh my God, he's terrible. Like, okay, get back to his kids, Sean and Mike. You take them with you to pick up a known felon who's known around the city, well, certain parts of the city, to rob drug dealers. And you have them in the same car, and your kids are like, they don't know what to make of this. They're scared. Like, what? What is going on here?
As it should be.
And then, it gets worse, man. Not only that, you pick up said killer, stick-up dude, to take him to the morgue.
Omar.
Yes, Omar. Let's not get it twisted who we're talking about here. You take Omar with your kids down to the morgue to identify the body of his lover, who was also his stick-up partner as well.
Damn.
And leave your kids downstairs sitting on the bench while you go upstairs.
Damn.
Yeah. So they up there, they had a soccer ball with them and whatnot, so they're in there playing soccer and whatnot, passing time. You just hear just this horrendous scream of anguish and pain because Omar finally sees his lover there. You know, and the kid's like, what was that? How traumatic would that be to any child? You got me down here in the dead of night on a school night for this?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
He was awful, man. He was awful. And he just made bad decision after bad decision because he was so selfish. He was just super crazy selfish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I think Jimmy McNulty is definitely an example of a crappy dad.
So. But let me ask you this, Swain. Why is it, even though he has extreme feet of clay, right, and we're seeing that, damn, he is a raging asshole. Why do we love that? Maybe love isn't the right word, but why do we like that character so much, man? In spite of everything that we see on both sides of the law, he's brilliant as a detective, but to his home life and for his children and as a father, oh, he's atrocious. He's terrible. How would you explain that?
You go, Asian. I got my theory, but I haven't seen your show. I'll give my outsider's theory, but you go give your actual theory. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead, D.
Yeah, go ahead, man. Yeah.
Well, my outsider's theory is that people love train wreck, and they love to see people who reflect the worst side of human nature and that do things and make choices they wouldn't make so they can feel better about themselves and criticize. And a lot of times it's because they know someone like that and can relate to it, but they didn't take it to the extreme in which they took it. And now they're able to see that, you know, I'm capable of making better choices than that person. So that's my basic summation.
You know, that's actually very valid, D. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the reason why a lot of dramas like that work too, you know, as well. Like we see these unsympathetic characters and it's almost a sigh of relief, like, oh, I can watch somebody else do that. Oh, thank God it's not me.
Right.
You hope that it's not you.
Exactly.
You
know what I'm saying?
But yeah, I agree with that.
That's the secret of reality TV too, man. Reality TV is the same way. Like you watch the, you know, whoever, Desperate Housewives, desperate husbands, whoever you want, you know, you watch them because it gives you an opportunity to see, okay, well, damn, you know, this thing, they're really messed up, you know, they're really like really not making bad decisions, poor decisions. If it were me, I would do this. And you invest the interest into it, you invest who you are personally in it, and it becomes the thing which you can't miss TV or can't miss, you know, characterization. So
now I will add this, if I could, Swizz, with Jimmy McNulty, I believe it's in the third season, he temporarily makes a turnaround, you know, like he falls in love and actually moves in with one of the other characters. And she already has a couple of daughters. Mm. And so he kind of becomes Uncle Jimmy, you know, of sorts. You know, he's there and he's trying to make a go at this domestic life and everything. He's trying not to drink and turn himself around.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you see that he can't. You know, a dog does not change their spots. You can wash it off, but them spots ain't gonna go away, man.
Yeah.
And that's a damn shame because it throws you for a loop when you see it in the story arc. You're like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And it almost looks like it's gonna last, and then, but you're not surprised when it doesn't. You're just like, yep.
So let me ask you this: this character's ultimate comeuppance in terms of the story arc. Not to spoil anything, because eventually I may see it, I may not ever see it or whatever. Does he ultimately, so, and then building his character up again to a point where you can like him and think he's redeemable, does he ultimately die? Does he get shot or killed in the story? Well, that's highly unusual, because usually they'll pull those strings back and forth if you care enough about that character, the way they're going to put him in some kind of situation where they're ultimately going to kill him, you know? So if that didn't occur, then kudos to the writers.
Yeah, but the problem is, D, is that other people around him, based upon his actions, and acting upon his detective work, do get hurt, get shot.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow. That's crazy.
So, yeah. It's just it's very complex. Twisted. Very complex,
I like that. You actually want to watch it, Adrian.
I think you should. That's the point. We hope you would, man. Come on in.
Right? You guys have been talking about this for years, man. You know? Like, okay.
Yeah. It's a great show.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, man, you need to jump on in, homie. Splash.
Nice.
Hey, cool. Adrian, go ahead and throw down Clown Face, man.
Okay, all right. Go ahead and wrap it up, man. My choice for Bad Father is Clown Face from Jason Pearson's Body Bag series.
Right.
Okay. And if you know anything about body bags, you know the most egregious example I'm going to bring up.
Yeah.
Foremost before anything.
The beginning of the story, even.
Exactly. Like, D, you exactly right. It's from, like, damn page one, literally. All right. So, Clownface is a bounty hunter in the near future town of Terminus, which is based on Atlanta. Atlanta used to be called Terminus, blah, 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 so forth.
Right.
All right, anyway, he finds this bounty on this drug dealer, right? And before he approaches the walk-up, it's already established that the drug dealer's inside with his girl. His girl is pregnant. But she's snorting up a mountain of coke, man. Just taking blow up the nose like it's nothing. So he knocks on the door. One of her girlfriends goes and answers the door. It's like, what you want? He punches her out the way. Mm-hmm. He comes up in and he takes out a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And the girlfriend stands up and we just see off panel. We just hear a shh. And he's talking to the drug dealer. And the next panel is revealed. There's a knife belly deep in the pregnant girlfriend. He's like, look, I've already killed your unborn child.
Damn.
But that child was dead anyway with all the blow that she was snorting.
Damn.
You know? So if you don't tell me what I need to know, if you don't come with me, you already see I don't have no problem doing what I need to do.
Right.
I think he ended up killing the dude anyway.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But right there from the jump, it's just like, okay, this dude is just reprehensible. Like, there's no redeeming qualities. And at no point during the series does he redeem himself.
Mm-hmm.
So when he has this daughter named Panda that he is unaware of, who comes to stay with him, you know, and she tells him that, hey, look, you know, mom ended up dying, so I had nowhere else to go. So I tracked you down and I'm here. And he kind of just gives her the brush off, like, no, you ain't even my daughter. Man, you know what? You be nothing but a hindrance. You know what? I should probably just kill her. You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
Just being just a terrible dad. Just terrible, man. You know? And it's funny because the character, like I said, never redeems himself, you know? And I think that's the point of the character. And then also, you know, with that, you got to imagine as well, you know, when Pearson created this series, he was a young man himself, you know. To my knowledge, I'm not sure. You guys may know different. I don't know if he has any children himself as of now, But at that point, he did not. He was like in his early 20s when he was writing this.
Right.
So a lot of the writing has the feeling of, you know, a 20-something writing this tough crime, you know, comic, explosive action, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, there's no tenderness about it. The only tender moment, I would say, and it's not even that tender, at the end of the series, after all is said and done, and they've taken their lumps and they've killed these other assassins that are trying to come after them.
Right.
Panda is laid up in the hospital, and basically Clown Face is just like, well, I mean, she's here. I definitely don't want her, but hell, she's here. Well, this is just what we got to do. This is the situation. It is what it is. Mm. And so he almost does like a Lone Wolf and Cub type of moment. You remember in Lone Wolf and Cub where, I forget the character's real name in Lone Wolf and Cub, but anyway, Lone Wolf basically.
Degoro?
That's the child, yes.
Right, okay.
Whatever his father's name was, you know, he gave him the choice between the sword and the ball.
Yeah.
Like in the opening of Liquid Swords.
Yeah.
Choose the sword or the ball. You know, that type of thing.
It was a great scene, man.
She didn't have a choice, really. He just made a choice for her. He was like, basically, all right, well, you've embraced this path now. You've basically embraced this pathway to hell. So you in this now. So on the last page, there's a big splash page where he's laid a Glock pistol beside his daughter Panda, and she's just smiling warmly like it's a teddy bear. Mm-hmm. She's laid up in the hospital bed just cuddling this Glock. Mm-hmm. It's like,
Twisted.
It's very twisted. But again, like we were talking about with Jimmy McNulty, there's an entertainment value to that, but also you would never want to be that type of parent. It's just terrible. And then all throughout, like throughout that series and the other two one shots that feature them, he's just going back and forth with Panda, just cussing her out and saying, "Well, if you don't want to do this, you don't think you're up to this. Why don't you go back to where you came from?" And just and then eventually it gets to the point where she is my daughter. I get it. Just gruffly have to accept this. You know, I don't have to like it, but it is what it is. But yeah, just heinous, man. Just and I think I read somewhere too that Pearson, he actually did, if I'm not mistaken, in the interview say that he did regret writing in that scene from that first issue with stabbing the pregnant girlfriend and everything. You know, he was like, yeah, I was just real young when I wrote that. You know what I'm saying? So
Plus, at the time when he made it, if I'm not mistaken, that was post, you know, post Boys in the Hood, post Menace to Society, post Pulp Fiction. So there was a lot of crazy violence and a lot of crazy violence in movies, and that was really permeating the culture, and I think that probably had an effect on him.
Right.
Along with all the other things that he was interested in.
Sure.
That he brought to the, you know, to the fore with the in the comic and with the story.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.